At Class Act Federal Credit Union, it's all about the people and education. Class Act serves the educational community of Louisville and surrounding counties, including University of Louisville students and alumni. Ask about our honors checking accounts that yields 4% interest and allows $25 in ATM refunds each month. Drop your bank, join the movement. Text ESPN to 502-212-3167 to enter our weekly $25 Visa gift card drawing. Again, text the word ESPN to 502-212-3167. Visit classact.org today.
Broadcasting live from the OPC Services Studios, time now for The Drive with Mark Ennis, right here on 93.9 The Ville.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Tom Farmer, sitting in for Luke Hancock today, and we appreciate that. As we mentioned before we took a break here, joining us now, Andy Staples, who with The Athletic. I got to get used to saying that, Andy. How's the transition to The Athletic going so far?
It's great. I write stories and I send them to a different email address. So
super different for you.
For me, it hasn't been too bad.
Do they appreciate your love of smoked meats as much as everybody else at Sports Illustrated seemed to?
Oh, of course. Here's the thing. I already knew everybody who worked there. There's a bunch of people I used to work with at SI. And there's a bunch of people I've just gotten to know through the years covering different beats and just covering the sports. So it's great. Now we're just trying to figure out how to incorporate the food writing into it. I think we have something fun. I can't reveal any dates yet, but something fun coming up here in the next couple of weeks.
We'll be watching. We are shameless shills for The Athletic on this show, so don't be apologetic about it at all. You're among friends. All right, Andy, look, you contributed to the this ACC preview that you, Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel put together, the three of you. And two of you, including yourself, had Louisville go 4-8. Before I dig into what that 4 and what that 8 looks like, give me your rationale for why not worse, why not better, why 4-8?
I think they will get better than they were at the end of last season. Because, well, let's
how
be
could
honest,
you not? Just say
worse.
It, man. Just say it.
Yeah, they can't really be much worse.
Right.
But I'm trying to remember exactly how I had that season going. I think I had them starting a little slow and then picking up as they went forward, because you know I think Scott Satterfield's going to need some time with this group, and so it may be that it takes a little while. But I still had them losing to Kentucky. I know the Louisville fans don't want to hear that, but you know, let's be honest, Mark Stoops' program is in a healthier place right now. I think Louisville's going to get there, and probably quicker than people think. But I think this year's going to be tough.
Where, how, I guess, like on the spectrum of Scott Satterfield, folks, I know you've talked about sort of being a big fan of his evaluative skills and things like that. Like, I don't know, like percentage confidence you have that this is a hire that's going to work out for him and Louisville both.
Oh, it's a very high percentage. I think it's going to work out very well for both of them. Listen, you can get players to Louisville. There's no problem there. He has access now to a better caliber of athlete than he had access to at Appalachian State. And he recruited very well for that level. He'll recruit very well for this level. The problem is it's just going to take some time. You know, in the ACC, and remember, when we're talking recruiting, you're not just in the ACC. You're in ACC, SEC, South territory, basically. And so it's very fierce competition for guys. It's going to take him a minute to get a foothold in there and to get, you know, figure out exactly what he's looking for, calibrate a little better, you know, what they're looking for. Because Appalachian State, it was an interesting way they did it. You know, it was, let's find the guy who runs like the ACC or SEC guy, but has some measurable that keeps them from recruiting him. Now, they don't have to worry about that. They can just recruit that guy. Now, Florida State still may be a sexier destination, even though I would argue that their program is not in a great spot right now either. But I think you can flip that pretty quick by starting to win again. They're gonna win again. He succeeded everywhere he's been. So I don't think that's gonna be a problem. And I realize he's been to Appalachian State and FIU, but He was really good at Appalachian State, had a great formula for winning, and I think that is translatable to the ACC.
How about the style of play then? Because it's obvious he sort of self-consciously decided everyone's is spread. Everyone is sort of this hurry-up offense, that sort of thing. He's like, all right, we're going to play man ball. We're going to use tight ends and H-backs, and we're going to run, you know, inside and outside zone, and we're going to control the ball, that sort of thing. I mean, will that, as like an underdog strategy, will that work in the ACC in your mind?
Well, here's the thing. What is that if not looking at where the trends are going and then attacking people where they're weak? Because remember, defense is adjusted to deal with the spread. So you had a bunch of teams putting five corners on the field in their secondary because they needed to be able to run with slot receivers. Well, now you got a bunch. Now you got H-backs in there. It's hard to cover an H-back. You know, you could have a super fast guy, but an H-back's going to body him and catch the ball 9 yards down the field, and you got a problem. So I would say that's smart coaching. That's just trying to stay one step ahead of everybody else. And, you know, everything we've seen from him is that that's the type of guy he is.
Talking with Andy Staples of The Athletic here on The Drive on 93.9 The Ville. Andy, is there any reason for me, if I were to make some sort of prop bet, to pick anybody other than one of the five, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, and Oklahoma, any reason to pick anybody else to make the college football playoff this year?
I think if Oregon beats Auburn, then you may see them having a shot. But the thing is, Oregon's got to do a couple things in terms of just learning how to be successful. And last year, you look at them, so they beat Washington in this overtime classic, and suddenly they're in control in the Pac-12 North. And then what do? They go losing Pullman, and they get their doors blown off in Tucson the next 2 weeks. That can't happen. You know, you've got to learn how to be consistent every week. It's not just get up for the big games. You got to be able to win the ones you're supposed to win too. And that is what Oregon, if they can learn that, then I think they could be good enough. You know, they have an offensive line that stacks up very well with the lines at, you know, Alabama, at Clemson. I don't know about Georgia, because Georgia's offensive line is kind of off the charts at this point. But they're there. Defensively, I don't know if they have the kind of athletes that compare with those other ones. But the thing is, if you beat Auburn and Auburn turns out to be halfway decent, you can get away with losing a game in the Pac-12. I don't think Washington or Utah, who are the other more likely teams to win the Pac-12, I don't think they can get away with it. Their schedules, you know, BYU is the best out-of-conference opponent for both. So, I mean, I would think they would have to go 12-0 to make the playoff. I think Oregon, if they beat Auburn, could get in at 12-1, or 11-1 in the regular season, 12-1 after the title game.
Is Urban Meyer coaching somebody next year, and if so, whom?
I don't know. I mean, listen, if USC fires Clay Helton, I would not be surprised if USC went after Urban Meyer. But if I'm Urban Meyer, and the same health issues have popped up at two different places, and if you watched that Ohio State-Maryland game last year, you know, what was going on with him, you wouldn't wish on anybody. And I just don't know, will he try to say, well, it's not going to happen again, when, you know, he thought the same thing when he went from Florida to Ohio State, and it did happen again. Like, at this point, you know it's going to happen again. So, because, you know, the pressures of the USC job are not any different, really, than the pressure of the Ohio State or Florida jobs. So that's the part I wonder about. You know, will he come to terms and say, you know what, I'm not sure I want to go through that again? Because if he does say that, he's never coaching again. But you know how these guys are.
That's right.
They're away from it a little while, and he's going to be doing that pregame show for Fox. He may go on location a couple times. He may hit some campuses and be like, you know what, I'm a coach. I got a coach. But I just, after seeing that happen twice, I would have a hard time believing he's going to sign up to put himself through that again.
Is he 100% hireable? Like, is there no, like, permanent fallout for him from the whole Zach Smith thing, that nobody would look at him and be like, you know what, I don't think we could do that?
People like to win, Mark.
you don't have to tell me, dude. Really, all right, like, I'm in Louisville, okay? I know.
Exactly. I mean, I mean, yeah, lest we forget the greatest coach introductory press conference of all time, Tom Jurich going, yeah, he lied to me. Yeah, I don't like him very much, but he won some games here, so here's Bobby Petrino again.
It was at least honest. It was honest.
It was sort of honest.
Fair enough. I'll give him that. It was sort of honest. I guess nothing with Bobby is like totally honest, right?
There was a person chatter in there that I just kind of laughed at.
Talking with Andy Staples of The Athletic. Andy, who's the first Power 5 coach that gets fired?
Well, if you look at the start of USC's schedule, I can see things rolling downhill quickly if they're not much better with their change on offense. They could be 2-4 after the Notre Dame game, and I have a very hard time believing Clay Helton survives that. It's just, you know, and the thing is, they actually probably the back half of the season have a shot at winning a lot more games, but, you know, they've got to be careful. I mean, their opener's tricky. They play Fresno State, and I don't know if people know, but Fresno State's won 23 games the last 2 years. Like, since Jeff Tedford got back there, they've been really good. I mean, they won the Mountain West last year. So you got that. They play Stanford. They play BYU. They play Utah. That Utah on a Friday night, week 4. I mean, if Utah really puts it to USC and dominates them on both lines of scrimmage, which is Utah's strength, and USC should be good at it, but hasn't been, then I got a hard time believing there's any way he can salvage that.
Andy, this is Tom Farmer. You were in your ACC preview. Of course, Mark and I were both a little bit bully about the fact that you gave us the 4-8 marker, and a lot of speculation between the two of us about, okay, you know.
You just watched the end of last season, right?
Yes.
No, we have no issue with the 4-8 whatsoever, yeah, just to be clear.
Absolutely. In other words, we're happy about it. That's the
takeaway. Okay, good. Oh, I'm glad.
Yeah. But my question, though, and something that probably concerns a lot of U of L fans, is going into that first game of the season against Notre Dame, everything has been puke and rainbows and fart and sunshine around here. Everybody loves everybody. We're getting along. The culture has changed. But what happens when you go into that September 3rd game against Notre Dame, and what potentially is the inevitable happens, and you get the wind taken out of your sails? How does that impact the rest of the season?
Well, you hope they put up a fight. I mean, that's the thing. I don't expect anything out of Louisville in that game. So if Louisville's in that game for a half, I'm going to go, you know what? Satterfield got him ready to play. And that's fine. Because Notre Dame's really good. Don't listen to the people who say, oh, Notre Dame didn't deserve to be in the playoff last year. Notre Dame lost by less to Clemson than Alabama lost Clemson by. And Notre Dame was a good team. Like, when the Clemson offensive lineman said Notre Dame was actually tougher than Alabama, he wasn't lying. So, it is going to be a difficult game. If Louisville puts up a fight at all, that's a great sign. Because 9 months ago, that team wouldn't fight anybody.
Of course, going into the rest of the ACC play, one of the natural targets that your eyes would gravitate to for U of L would be Wake Forest. Mark, in the first hour, you were talking about how that Florida State game could prove to be a pivot point to tell us how things have progressed, at least in this season. And, of course, Andy, you said it's probably going to take at least 2 years to get things really back on the rails. But what do you think about that opportunity there? Of course, it depends on a lot that happens to Florida State, but is that an opportunity to show off how much or how far they've come in a short period of time?
It is, but the problem is I think Florida State's going to get better pretty quickly this year. I don't know that it necessarily means they're going to be back where they're actually competing with Clemson again, but I do think they're going to be 3-4 wins better this season than they were last year. They are, you know, changed offensive coordinators. They've got Kendall Briles now, who's really running an offense that he helped design. And, you know, Willie Taggart had borrowed this offense from Baylor back when Taggart was at USF. And they had Walt Bell last year. He had not been in that system before, so he was just kind of learning as he went. And, you know, Kendall Briles doesn't have to learn it. He knew it before Willie Taggart knew it. So my guess is you're not going to see them struggling to get lined up in game 12 like you did last year. I would expect a much more crisp, efficient offense. And then it's Florida State. They still got a bunch of athletes on defense. So, and if I were a Florida State defensive player, I would have been so frustrated last year. Just having a functional offense, and I think they will have a functional offense this year, is going to make that defense so much better because they won't be getting put in really bad positions all the time.
Are you overall a believer in Willie Taggart there? I know there's just a lot of skepticism for whatever reason about, you know, after year one and the end of the streak. Are you a believer?
Willie Taggart. I've always liked him, and if you look at the places he's been, Western Kentucky was in a bad spot when he got there, and he built it into a pretty consistent program. USF was in a bad spot when he got there. He built it into a program that was winning fairly consistently. Oregon, you can't really count. He's only there a year, but he did. They did get better while he was there. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say he's got a pretty good track record. I'd say he's not lying when he says that Florida State was a bit more of a salvage job than people realize. I think that doesn't absolve him of blame for how bad they looked last year. But I do think he realized there's a little more work to be done. And he's done some projects like this before.
All right, now, and I'm going to ask you the question that there's never really a firm or good answer to, but I want you to take a shot, and that's this. Who's going to win the Coastal?
Ha-ha! You think I'm going to say Virginia because they have a quarterback and because they've never won it before, and they're the only team that's never won it before. But the team I picked is Virginia Tech because I think they've gotten through all that attrition stuff that they were dealing with. And they know what they're dealing with. They know what they've got now roster-wise. And I think they're due for a bounce back. And Virginia didn't get them last year and should have. And I think that was their chance. So I got to go with the Hokies.
Well, that's interesting that you would kind of go there because I think people sort of view them as sort of rolling the opposite direction. Like, what do you attribute all like the attrition and all that sort of thing to that they would be able to just bounce right back from that?
I just think it was part of the coaching change. Maybe, you know, a few years later, it was
okay.
Washing out a little bit of the tail end of the Beamer era recruiting. And now they're on a little more solid footing with their roster. So, hey, last year seemed like there was a lot of drama going on behind the scenes last year. It doesn't feel like that now.
All right. Andy Staples and The Athletic, man, thank you so much for making time for us, buddy. We appreciate it. Let's do this again sometime soon.
All right. See you guys.
There you go. Andy Staples, The Athletic.
I liked his reaction to, hey, you know, we saw that 4-8. Hey, don't shoot the messenger. I'm like, no.
No, listen, yeah.
We want to give you gifts and feed you dinner for that. Thank you so much.
No, that's actually pretty funny that he would react that way. No, I had the exact same thought there. Interesting that he would pick Virginia Tech there. We are, again, heading into an ACC season where we have the distinct possibility of if Virginia does pull it off, and win the Coastal, you would have seven different teams win the Coastal in seven consecutive seasons. I badly want that to happen.
I believe Bruce on there, perhaps one of Andy's counterparts, said that would be completely on brand for the ACC Coastal Division. So, yes, that's the kind of thing that I like to see because I like when the universe just flips you a big middle finger. I enjoy that thoroughly.
Well, look, the ACC Coastal is good for hilarious forms of parody. P-A-R-I-T-Y, not parody, which it's also good for that. But parody in this way. You can either get seven teams in 7 years, which is incredibly hard to organize and pull off, or an entire division that goes 6-6.
That's parody, which is very similar to a steroid-infused virgin, as we know, thanks to intern Green there.
Exactly. Text into the UPS jobs text line 3831939. So we can play the over at 3.5, right? Yeah, look, I have tempered my optimism about the team this year, especially with Malik Cunningham at least seeming to be injured for now at least. But I would still take over 3.5. And I did already bet that I do think that they will win more than 3.5 games this year. Does that seem like a crazy bet to you?
It does not seem like a crazy bet. I am in the same camp as you in that the more I've seen what little we've seen, but what we have seen makes me think, well, I'm really happy the culture has changed. That's something that absolutely had to happen, but I'm not going to see that translate into immediate impact on the field. It's going to take time, and that's okay. That's perfectly acceptable. Just like Andy said, he predicted at least 2 years for things to get really back on the rails. So a little bit of that initial optimism has worn off for me, but I do not think it's crazy at all to say plus three, 3.5. Again, EKU, WKU, hopefully those are givens. Obviously, last season said there are
not,
no givens.
It's going to be a long year.
Right. But a lot of U of L fans out there obviously got their targets set on UK, and if they can Wake Forest is the obvious one, as I said, but if they could throw that Florida State one in there, just as you were talking about in the first hour, that would really show a lot of people, hey, you know, yes, things are being restored.
8150, 93.9, that's the number. If you want to get in here, 3831, 93.9 for the UPS Jobs text line. Let's go ahead. We will take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to go to that, to the discussion of that Florida State game and what it means on Louisville's schedule for this season, because, again, I think it is a an enormous opportunity for Louisville. And even though Andy Staples there was kind of like, you forget that one, I'm not ready to forget that one just yet. And I want to tell you why for two reasons. On the other side, here on The Drive on 9th on the Bill. Be right back.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $14 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588.
You're listening to The Drive with Mark Ennis, right here on 93.9 The Ville.
Welcome back into The Drive here on 93.9 The Ville. Mark Ennis, Tom Farmer, you know him as roommate Tom, is in here sitting in for Luke Hancock today. If you want to join us, now would be the time to get in. 8150, 93.9, 3831, 93.9 here in 10, 15 minutes. Bill Bender, who has a wonderful article on Scott Satterfield in the Sporting News. He will join us at 4:40 or so. We'll talk with him then and get some of his thoughts on some of the things that Scott did since arriving to sort of help jumpstart things, get things moving around here, including having Matt Campbell come in from the outside to basically audit the program. Couple texts into the UPS Jobs text line. One, can someone please isolate roommate Tom saying puking rainbows and farting sunshine? Andy Staples also seems to really like that.
That I will admit that I kind of worked that one up in my head before I said it. So,
well, it was flawlessly delivered because I think that there's a lot of opportunity for shenanigans there. You did that well.
That's the next evolution here is for me to make the mixtape, right?
That is, like, you're not really totally official. Like, you know, on Hard Knocks when Gruden was like, no rookie hazing. But if you want to make them sing the fight song or something, you can go for it. Sent. Yeah, that's definitely going to make it right. Yeah. It was pretty well delivered, and the mixtape is really for total screw ups.
But right, that was good.
It might be too good for the mixtape. Is what I'm saying.
That's fair. It's like
Andy Staples laughed. Right, that has to count for something.
It's when I was still president of that soccer supporter group over there. Well, the first time I had to mitigate a fight, and they were like, "Well, you know." That's now you're part of the team. Now you've actually done it. I'm like, yes.
Mixtape is kind of final validation. Yes.
There you go. That feels good. So I appreciate that. Thanks for noticing my awesome, non-cursing, funny thing that I said.
That reminds me. You will also accidentally curse on the air, and Brian will have to dump you. That will also happen.
Let's just say that is the one that I'm going to try the hardest not to.
I mean, it took me a long time, but eventually Jared Stillman did make me cuss on the air.
That right? I can understand completely.
Right. Okay. Another text into the UPS Jobs text line, 3831, 93.9. With the ACC Atlantic being the better division and the Coastal being so even, do you think there will be realignment soon? They talk about it all the time, but no. I don't think that they will unless, instead of changing the divisions, they just got rid of them.
That's like, what I would agree with.
Yeah, that to me is much more likely that the conference would just look at it and say, we'll put the two best teams in there. And it would be something similar to what the Big 12 does, you know, where it ultimately is kind of a rematch just because they only have 10 teams. But the far more likely scenario is that they would protect just a couple of games, that you would have like two permanent opponents, and then everyone would rotate a lot more. And I got to be honest with you, Tom, I would take that in a heartbeat. I like the Atlantic. I like playing Clemson and Florida State on a regular basis. I hate that Virginia is our permanent opponent. I hate that they're our permanent double opponent in basketball. because it sucks. But I Louisville got put into the Maryland spot, and that's how they ended up with Virginia. But I would like to play, and I think if you ask people at Louisville, you'd like to play Virginia Tech a little more, like to play Miami a little more, like to play Georgia Tech and play in Atlanta a little more, especially with the football staff now that recruits Georgia so heavily. Would like those, and there is kind of feeling around the ACC, especially with teams north of the Virginias, the Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Boston College. They all want to play south more. They want to play Georgia Tech more. They want to play Miami and Florida State more than they get to right now. And the division's set up the way that they are, not going to let it happen.
I agree that blowing them up completely and just getting rid of them is probably the only viable option, because anymore there is no excuse. We remember when we were talking about being part of the American Conference and we were saying, well, we're going to have to travel to Boise. And it was like, that's annoying, but it wasn't a second thought. It's like, yeah, we'll travel to Boise. Okay, whatever. Or the Big East, I remember that. But there's always going to be a certain element to the scheduling concept of, it would be nice if you played each team twice and were able to have a clear and definitive, this team is the best out of that. But in the way college football is currently aligned, that's never going to happen. And you're just going to have to make do with what you got.
Yeah, once you go to leagues this big, you're never going to get like the true round robin with the Big 12 does. And I'm fine with that. I would just like to play Virginia Tech more than once every 12 years. Right? Like, we're not even in the same conference. We're in-laws at best.
I agree. Right? Absolutely. And that's the thing is, with basketball, you have so much more opportunity, but with football, you don't. And 100% agree that some of these teams that we're not seeing very often would be entertaining games to have come here, and we're not getting that.
Text line says that the Big Ten needs to do that. The East Division kills itself every season. You start ranking the best teams in the Big Ten. I mean, Kareem was talking about this as being a poor Indiana fan. Like, you wake up every day under Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State every year, no matter what. And then at the same time, Purdue and Wisconsin, like the Iowa, these programs that aren't nearly as good, they have chances to ring up huge win totals because they don't have to play any of those guys.
Things inevitably change, but it takes a long time, and you have to suffer for so long. I mean, imagine being in the 70s, a Red Sox fan, and the Yankees, just like, well, just forget about it. What's the point of even getting up in the morning, because this ain't going to happen? Now, 20, 30 years later, things are different, but you know what? I'm an old man at that point. I don't care anymore. I've been beaten down. I'm done.
Typically, though, it is a bad idea to try. Well, the ACC is a good example of trying to construct divisions with a specific outcome in mind, because you've gotten it. Well, you've never gotten Florida State versus Miami, which is what you wanted, but you've only gotten Miami one time in 12 plus years, you know, in the league, right? Or no, 16 years in the league. You've only gotten them one time, and you've never gotten Florida State Miami, which you wanted. But two, to try to just construct them to be sort of evenly competitive, every conference that's in divisions has had periods of time where one is just way better. And right now, look, we think of the SEC West as just being significantly better, but for the early life of the SEC, it was Florida, Georgia, Tennessee way over everybody else, and the SEC West was kind of a joke. And whoever won routinely just skunked whoever they played from the SEC West. And now things have flipped, and maybe they'll head back more towards kind of equilibrium there, but you can't move your divisions around to try to even them up, because the teams don't stay.
Right. Even in the time that U of L was with Conference USA, that was in some cases embarrassing for the opponents they had to play. But the experience, and one of the other things Andy was talking about in some of his athletic writing, was how the fan experience plays into game scheduling. Obviously now with the ACC network coming in, that makes a big difference for things. What do they consider in terms of how are the fans going to react? And honestly, the answer is not much at all, because the money is going to come from somewhere. It's going to come from TV. It's going to come from ticket sales. It's going to come from merchandise. And so when they say, okay, let's stick this game at 9 o'clock at night on a Tuesday or something stupid like that, the factors that led to that have nothing to do with, are people going to show up and do this, because they know they're going to watch on TV. So, again, there is no excuse at this point where you can't play these games with these teams in your conference, no matter how large it is, and have a good experience on the field.
Now, we had mentioned before we took the commercial break that when we came back, we talked a little bit about that Florida State game and for the opportunity there for Louisville. to either have a big season relative to expectations or not, like to sort of relatively overachieve or not, is really going to swing on that game. Andy Staples saying, the Florida State game is not going to be one for you. I'm not convinced of that at all. Louisville has played them competitively. They did last year. Even when both teams were sort of sinking, they still played them competitively a year ago. Two reasons why I still feel like that game can be a game that Louisville could steal. Yes, I would agree entirely that it makes a big difference that Kendall Briles is there, whether that's morally acceptable or not, that Kendall Briles is at Florida State. But I'm going to say two things. One, last year's offense had a, in my mind at least, look, DeAndre Francois is obviously kind of a meathead. And there's a reason that he's out of there. And the coaches hated him. That certainly has sort of come out between now and then. But there's no indication to me that James Blackman is better. That he is a better or even as good quarterback as DeAndre Francois was. And if you're going to run that offense, I want you to think about the offense at Baylor that was so good. You think about the quarterbacks that were so good in that offense. Like, it's not always transferable. Like, they don't automatically make every other quarterback better. We've seen Blackman. Louisville beat them when they weren't any good 2 years ago with Blackman at quarterback. I am absolutely skeptical that dude can run that offense.
I think that's fair. I mean, coming out of recruiting, he wasn't that highly ranked. And what you've seen of him and what we've seen of him and the fact that, let's just say, defensively, things are going to be a little bit different this year for U of L. I think that's easily a thing that could be handled. I agree with your point that there is nothing to make you assume that he is a better quarterback and can lead that offense any better. So I'll give you that one 100%, and especially the fact that I've seen some good things coming out of the defense from U of L's practice and what they've been talking about, the focus they've had at practice this morning. I saw some interesting things that made me think, hey, looking good, you know. So I'll give you that. Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing I wanted to bring up, David Hale, who is a stat nerd, extraordinaire. This stat blows my mind. And just follow me here for just a second. Rushing yards before first contact on first and second down. Designed runs. Okay, so not sacks or anything like that. Just a straight-up run play. First and second down, total number of yards on first and second down before first contact. So how many yards did you get before your running back ever touched a defender, right? Number one, Georgia Tech, almost 2,000 yards, 1,934 yards. Air Force, 1,899. Clemson, 1,579 yards. Florida State, first and second down, total yards before first contact on first and second down. How many yards? You want to guess? Again, number one is almost 2,000. You know, Clemson's number three with almost 1,600. Florida State, first and second down, designed runs before first contact. Total number of yards gained?
575.
Brian?
I'm going to give them 900.
Two! Wow. That is 1-2 at the risk of sounding like Blankenbaker and counting here. I'm talking 1 yard and then another yard. 6 feet. 2 yards before first contact on first and second down this year. You cannot look. I expect Louisville's offensive line to get a lot better this year, but they gained a hell of a lot more rushing yardage than that last year. You can't tell me this is going to become some great offensive line in 1 year.
Florida State starting running back average 0.5 yards a carry.
Wow.
Like, if you give me James Blackman, who I'm not afraid of, and an offensive line who was largely turnstiles last year, I'm not afraid. You want to go ahead and call Bill to your bubble. Like, I'm not that game doesn't scare me. And in particular, what I'm worried about with Louisville is offenses that will just line up and try to mash them. I think Notre Dame can do that. Obviously, Clemson can do that. Boston College may be able to do that. Kentucky's going to try to do that. NC State will probably try to do that. And I'm a little worried about them because they're not huge. We've been out there.
Right.
But Florida State ain't that.
No. And I would wager on the fact that I think Louisville's DBs are going to have a little bit better year than you might think. And in that situation, again, that's another opportunity there. And with Blackman and the secondary, we're looking at a chance where they could easily turn that game around with a couple picks here and there. It's a definite possibility. I looked at it myself and said, Mark, I agree with you. That is a game early in the season. Andy said, well, Florida State's going to get better. I'm like, that's not a long time to get better. It's not a long time for Louisville to get better, but it's an opportunity.
Yeah, the parallels there are actually kind of interesting with sort of all of the turnover, new schemes, all that sort of thing, brand new, and then the culture stuff. But they're at least in year two for at least some of that. But joining us now, one of our favorite guys that we have on the show, and he's writing about Louisville, and I'm not having him on just because he quoted me in the article, but it doesn't hurt. Bill Bender, The Sporting News. Bill, how's everything going, buddy?
Yeah, I had such good sourcing in that article at Sporting News
That's
today.
That's right.
Thanks for having me on, though.
Well, Bill, we appreciate you joining us here. Bill, how many times have you ever heard in talking to a coach that they, in trying to take sort of an assessment of where they were and what they've gotten themselves into, which I imagine Scott Satterfield's probably done more than once since he took the job, that they brought in a friend that's also a head coach somewhere else to get their assessment, like Scott Satterfield did with Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Have you ever heard of that before?
No, it was cool to hear. Like, he's pretty candid, and I thought he was pretty open when I talked to him at the ACC kickoff about how hard that decision to leave was. I mean, you know, imagine living somewhere for 30 years, going to school there, and then going to Louisville from App State, and not quite, you know, I thought it was interesting how he said he didn't have a ton of time to research, but the clock starts ticking when you get an offer. And it was interesting to hear his thought process and his candidness saying, you know, he's got three high school kids, and they weren't necessarily wild about it at first, but it becomes a family decision, and it sounds like that family, from what he's told me, has really become ingrained in the community and done a good job of getting into there, and I applaud him for that candidness with me.
Were you surprised, though, that you, like, coaches are so secretive, right, and they're so just unbelievably paranoid about each other and the media? Certainly you and I, we're not allowed to ever see anything, right? All of that sort of thing. And he's like, nah, I'm going to bring my buddy who's actually a head coach somewhere else in here and let him tell me what he thinks about it. Like, that just seems so incredibly different than what I'm used to hearing from coaches.
Yeah, and, you know, when I lived in Charlotte for 7 years, so as you guys know, I'm a Ohio kid, Central Ohio, you know, not too far from Kentucky, obviously, and pretty reserved state. You know, you're used to secrecy, paranoia, those kind of things. And when I lived in Charlotte, people were just so nice in general. And I'm like, why is everybody so nice down here?
What are you people up to? Yeah, I know. I know.
What's the game here? And Scott reminds me of that. I mean, he's obviously North Carolina native, has the twang, has that kind of, you know, easygoing way about him. But as some of the players said there, you know, there's an edge behind it. And I figured as much. I mean, Ryan Day's kind of like that up here, where you know there's an edge behind it. But I think the way he's gone about taking that job and kind of, you know, slowly coming in and making it his own, I like where, you know, if I was making a long-term bet on first-year coaches, you know, I think Mac will be good at North Carolina, but he's 67 years old. And I think Ryan Day will be good at Ohio State, but you can wait. Mark, you and I could probably coach Ohio State to a bowl game. And
I'm saying that somewhat
sarcastically. I think Scott Satterfield's an excellent long-term bet for his age and the program he's at and what he'll build at Louisville. And that's kind of what the article we have at SN kind of gets at.
I'm fascinated by this Matt Campbell thing. I feel like that's actually kind of a slick, good program to maybe say, like, hey, we're going to build it and get input on how they've done that, because they are in a league where now they deal with somebody who has structural advantages over them and have built a really competitive program. Louisville's going to need to do something kind of similar.
Absolutely. And I think that's, as you said, the timetable he didn't know. But, you know, Iowa State was picked third in the Big 12. Now, you had told me that 5 years ago. A chance.
The Russians hacked it, right?
Right. Well, they've done a good job in big games. They've done a good job in ranked teams. I think Matt Campbell has a defensive scheme that you're never going to fully stop people in the Big 12, but it gives some teams fits. And I think he's a fantastic football coach. And the fact that he's friends with Satterfield is a great parallel, because, you know, part of the thing with that article, I mean, Louisville's been through, what, four coaches and four conferences to try to find an identity. And he comes from a program where, when I say App State, everybody can do the math real quick. You think Michigan upset. You think a school that took Tennessee and Penn State to the limit, a school that won FCS national championships and is pretty darn good at this level now. And as I said in the article, the winning percentage between App at the FBS level and Louisville is not all that different. And maybe Satterfield saw that along the way.
Were you surprised at that, sort of the candidness of that, of all, like, my kids actually weren't all that thrilled about it. But I like Teddy Bridgewater. I like Lamar Jackson. I think we could do that there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the lifestyle of a coach, you know. That they move families all the time, and they have to make that adjustment. And I thought, you know, the two things that stuck out to him the reason why he thought he could win at Louisville is, one, you know, yeah, Louisville's defined, when I think of Louisville's football program, that's where my mind goes. Lamar Jackson, Bridgewater, the Brahms, good quarterbacks. And he's had good quarterbacks at App. So that's one thing. And then two, you know, the talent that he thinks he can bring there, that, you know, flipping the roster a little bit. The thing that stuck out to me most, Mark, was when he was talking about the roster and how he was kind of a little bit shocked that they had, you know, X amount of receivers on scholarship and only 8 offensive linemen on scholarship, and he wants to change that. And that, to me, is pretty smart, because, to me, you know, you can't win at any level without a good offensive line, a good defensive line. So I think that's coming. Dawkins at ACC kickoff talking about how the offense might be a little bit simplified, but in a good way. I mean, those are things that, again, if you're following that Iowa State blueprint, these are some things that kind of offer to me. Yeah, they might not have a great record this year, but it's going to look a lot better than it did on the second half of last season.
Do you think that'll be enough for folks? Like, I wonder about that myself. Like, 4-8 can look a lot of different ways. And, like, how does 4-8 look that it's kind of palatable for people for 1 year? Or was last year just so bad that whatever the hell it is, it's fine?
Well, cover your eyes the first half of the season, because they'll be lumps. And if you know, we talked about Iowa State. You know what a best-case scenario in some ways for Louisville might be, what Nebraska went through last year, where Nebraska was 4-8 last year, but they were just picked to win the Big Ten West. And I've probably talked more about their program this summer than anybody else in the Big Ten West, because there's an excitement around Scott Frost. There's a belief in that offensive system around Adrian Martinez. There is work to do on the defensive side of the ball, but Nebraska's an interesting chaos team this year, because you know they're going to get it in shootouts. You know they're going to be able to score on anybody, and you're not sure if they can stop anybody, and that leads to some fun football. And I think Louisville may go through that a little bit in the Atlantic. I mean, they're not that far removed from being Clemson's chief competition in the division, and they played two pretty darn good games along the way to get there. But can they do that long term? And I think with Sat, they might be able to do that.
That's always been kind of my big argument for, if you want to be optimistic. I'm not saying you got to be, but if you want to be somewhat optimistic about Louisville for this year, it's not like before last year you had thought to yourself that Wake Forest and NC State and Boston College and Syracuse had just, like, pulled away from Louisville all of a sudden, and last year totally makes sense to you. Like, nobody thought that before last year. They haven't really pulled that far away, right?
No, and quite honestly, Syracuse hasn't pulled that far away. I mean, Syracuse's got a system they believe in right now, and they can score points, and they can beat you at home, and they can hang a big number on you. But if you go in the Louisville football facility, isn't it Lamar Jackson leaping over a Syracuse guy right on the wall?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, to me, the gap isn't those schools in Louisville. The gap, quite frankly, isn't Louisville and really anybody in the ACC. The other division, the coastal division right now, I had to get that right. I've almost blanked. But, yeah, it's Clemson and the gap between Clemson and 13 schools. And Louisville's in the same chase as everybody else to try to get there. I mean, I've spent most of this week talking about Miami's backup quarterback. I didn't think that was going to happen.
Talking with Bill Bender from the Sporting News. He's got a great article about Scott Satterfield and sort of all, like, the evaluative things he did in taking over the job and how he's going to sort of build the program in his own image there. Bill, a lot of Louisville fans, you mentioned it, 4 different coaches, 4 different conferences. Since Howard was here in the 80s and early 90s, basically Louisville's never had anybody stay more than 5 years. In your mind, if Scott turns it around and gets it going anywhere close to what was happening at App State, like, is he the lifer? Is he the guy that stays for a decade or more and sort of sets a new floor? Or does he pine after some other job?
Well, it'll take commitment on both sides. I mean, if you want to draw the parallel to Matt Campbell, as many times as we can here, I think Iowa State's done a pretty good job of committing to him, because I'll be honest, when Ohio State's job opening came up, yeah, when Urban retired, I thought Matt Campbell was the perfect candidate.
Yeah.
because he's a Mountain Union guy. He's from here. He said it's a dream job, but they went straight to Ryan Day. And when that happened, I was like, the biggest winner there was Iowa State because they get to keep him. And, you know, if they have another, if they live up to that third place medal this year, he's going to get more looks. And I think same thing with Scott Satterfield. As long as, you know, they are successful, he may not entertain another job, but, I mean, it'll be on Louisville at that point to kind of hold on to him. And, you know, they've had that in the past with some coaches, like you said, that have been successful in short spurts. But I think the one caution with that is, you know this better than me, whether it was Petrino, Strong, or he's the one I'm missing. He left and it just didn't work out.
John L. Smith.
Yes, that's probably the biggest example of not working out. Of course, how could I forget him? Because how it worked out at Michigan State, you can. There's a choice there to be made, and maybe Scott ends up staying.
Talking with Bill Benn from the Sporting News.
Bill, kind of in the vein of what you're talking about, what does it take for, say, in the instance that Scott Satterfield is able to, say, in 3 years, turn the program around to a point that they regain that success? One of the things I've always joked about is how Louisville is big enough to be wanting to be a big city, but small enough that they can't be a big city. So we're stuck in this limbo of never being big like the big programs, but too small or too big to be small like the small schools. What is it, in your conversations with Scott Satterfield, what is the impression you got about his propensity? Obviously, he was at App State for so long. Now he comes to Louisville. What would be your prediction about, say, 5 years down the road and he's at a pivot point? Would he readily leave, or would he be the kind of person who says, this is where I wanted to be?
I would more toward the latter, just because, I mean, it took a lot for him to be pulled from App. And anybody that's been to Boone reminds me of my alma mater. I went to Ohio University, which for today is the Ohio University, by the way.
Until the copyright goes through,
I kind of joke around and say that all the time. But, I think Boone's a small town, small place, good relationships. I don't consider Louisville a small town. And I know from the basketball side of it, we know when they're a superpower on that side. That's another thing that struck me is he kind of got that when he went to the Duke game last year. He kind of saw that place jacked up. I remember watching it on TV, and he wants the football stadium to sound like that. And I don't blame him. I mean, because I was down there for the Clemson game on game day when game day was there a few years ago. And if you want to be a big-time power, it's got to sound like that all the time.
That's a tall order. Bill Bender from the Sporting News there, man. Good stuff. Again, can't recommend that article to you in the Sporting News enough. Thank you for making time for us, buddy. We appreciate it, as always.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for getting me in before Meet the Teacher night. Appreciate you, Mark.
All right, enjoy it, buddy. There you go. First day of school for everybody.
Except me, because I have no children.
That's okay.
I am in that camp, firmly.
Yeah, we have discussed this. That is true. There's no gray area with you in that camp at all. But good stuff from both Andy Staples and Bill Bender there on Scott Satterfield, the ACC. Again, I'm totally hung up on just the comfort level of bringing another head coach in to sort of get his opinion. And the Iowa State model, I'm all for that. Some amalgam of the Iowa State and Clemson model, which is obviously Satterfield's a huge fan of both of those. I'm all for trying to do that here.
Absolutely. I think one of the things we've noticed about this coaching staff and Scott Satterfield is there's not a lot of behind the curtains. Now, of course, we've talked about how the media haven't been able to watch practice, but it's not like they're nefariously hiding anything. There's some method to that madness. But in terms of who they are as people and what their motivations are, it's very much out in the open. And seeing that kind of thing where he says, I'm very willing to go to my friend who happens to be a coach too and say, hey, come and tell me what I can do. And just to be very out there and open and honest with yourself to say, okay, I've taken a step up to the ACC. I don't have the clay that I was hoping to have to mold into an ACC team. What do I do now? And some people would say, well, if I ask for help, then that's a sign of weakness. But that's not this coaching staff. They're the kind of staff that says, what do I have to do to be successful? Whatever that is, that's what I'm going to go for.
All right. Hour number two here in the books. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we can revisit both those interviews. We can go revisit the fact that the ACC network, of course, is here, what that means. Maybe talk a little bit more about that Florida State game. But I also want to talk about week zero A week from Saturday, we get football, and ESPN's about to absolutely ruin College Game Day for the very first week of the season. We'll talk about that and more on the other side here on The Drive on 939 The Bill.